Mark. Good morning. Today is Friday, November the 26th, in the middle of Thanksgiving weekend holiday. Luke Quimby is alongside. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are we excited about leftovers?
We are. We are indeed.
Yes.
Nothing like a turkey sandwich.
Yeah, you know.
The day after.
My driving question is, why don't we have cranberry jelly all year long for turkey sandwiches?
I do.
Well, I mean, we do at home, but I mean, like any of the franchise operators, you never see.
Never see it.
Yeah, I just kind of thought that was something that would be. It's on my list to find out. Are you?
The burning question of the day.
That is correct. Are you ready for your question this morning, sir?
I am indeed.
All right. Why is an unbelievable story called the cock and bull story?
Oh, that goes back to jolly old England. I don't know where, but it goes back to jolly old England.
Okay. Well, let's see. It's believed to be derived from ancient fables in which preposterous situations were acted out by talking animals, such as cocks and bulls.
Well, it's even before jolly old England.
Yeah.
Well, all righty then.
The jolly old farmyard, yes.
Ancient mythology.
There you go. Cultural. I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about culture today. Earlier this week, we had Jen Capps in from Humboldt State, and she's part of the new team with the Polytech, and was talking about the culture of the school and some of the things that they're really excited about. And it kind of got things stirred up a little bit in my mind about culture, you know, and particularly with a holiday weekend like Thanksgiving that is so American, so cultural-based. What is the concept of why we have culture? Not civilization, but culture.
Now, what did she say about Humboldt? What's the culture of Humboldt?
That it's moving from a more liberal arts focused to the Polytech, and a lot more additional offerings in those arenas, those skill sets, those disciplines than what the school has had. Yes, yeah.
Okay. So back to here and now. Culture comes from traditions that people have built up, which then become institutionalized and organized over time, and it's called culture. And then there are different cultural moments during the year or the decade. So we have repetitive celebrations of certain cultural items. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, that sort of thing.
So the culture then embraces that. Now, that's probably, if we could set that aside as the formal recognition, what about the informal stuff? Is that something that is multi-generational also, that gets passed down through the ages, so to speak? Or is that something that kind of gets reinvented with each generation?
I can't think of an informal one right now, can you?
Well, I'm thinking about, well, we always do this because, you know, and it's the tradition of maybe wearing red scarves on Christmas Eve.
Well, that could be family.
Yeah.
And then it could switch to the clan. Then it could switch to a small village. Then it could switch to a small city, depending upon how much power and importance it had in the initial phases of it.
Okay. What about something along the lines of Punxsutawney Phil? You know, it's really not an institution. You gave me a little bit of time, then I could come up with something a little bit more dynamic than red scarves.
Punxsutawney Phil came about in a city. There's only one place where it originated from. And how it originated there, I haven't the faintest idea. Except somebody thought it was interesting or important or useful or novel or a way to establish the city on the map to get more and more publicity. Then, so it could be a little bit of both of those.
Yeah. It certainly has become institutionalized rather than just being, you know, the small little burg. Yeah, yeah. So I suspect that may be one of America's greatest examples of this, other than, I mean, Thanksgiving, I think, don't most cultures have a form of that? Maybe not called the same, not celebrated the same, but still the recognition of the harvest that was?
Well, there's all kinds of recognitions and premonitions of the harvest, getting ready for it, expecting it to come, hoping for good weather, and that sort of thing. But I don't know all of them or most of them.
Yeah,
there's lots of traditions based upon weather. You know, that's where Stonehenge came from, was the ability to predict the harvest, springtime, the solstice, fall solstice, when to plant, when to reap, when to sow.
I'm wondering if those cultures that were around the equator, okay, so season really...
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, season really didn't happen. They still have harvests, but it's not quite the same way, you know, waiting for the sun to reappear in Egypt. That kind of happens daily. The novelty on that one's kind of gone versus some of the northern climes. Yeah. Huh. Hadn't reflected on that one lately. I would suppose that wardrobe and attire also often reflects the same kind of a visual indicator or sign of the same, the culture and the institutionalization of tradition.
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah? How do you give me a one-word answer? Yeah.
I'm not sure what to say to that one.
By golly, clever insight, young man. That would have been acceptable.
Yeah. You stumped me once again.
I just put that one on the pile over in the corner here. Not worry about it too much.
Stump
them pile. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Join Warren Eckstein on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Lou Quimby. Lou, color has an awful lot of emotional connotation with different people, different areas, geographic areas,
sure.
different cultures, different times in history. What is the association often with color and whether or not it's a good color or a bad color? A pleasing color, a displeasing color? Where does that all come from, and how does it change?
Well, I'm thinking about Christmas and red and green, and I think of the holly plant with the green leaves and the red berries. And so that can become generalized into all sorts of red and green costumes and appliances and appurtenances and all sorts of cards and letters and things like that. Other colors have attributed to them things which may or may not be true, like painting walls a pale green in order to get people to calm down.
Right. Well, you hear about that with restaurants too. red tablecloth versus blue tablecloth. I don't know if it's been studied or not, the distinction between the two or not, but it certainly is out there. So with, you know, how people react to colors, is that something that has been studied? I mean, you said light green or blue is another one, or a soft pink. You know,
well, most upper echelon business people dress in black suits or very dark navy, and so the splash of color that they add to that would be their tie, and they can be all school ties or just diagonal striped ties or ties with intricate patterns like fleur-de-lis, that sort of thing. So it depends on if you're going to be in an upper echelon, you have to be careful how you dress.
Right, well, there's the old reference of IBM blue.
Yeah.
You know, and the Watson folks all were dressed that way. I think that went out a little while ago. But yeah, different colors. Has there been any cultural studies that you're aware of that talk about how colors come into fashion and then go out of fashion?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I haven't followed the study trends on use of color.
Yeah, I there's got to be some logic behind it. I mean, if you look at the vehicles driving around now, white, black, a little bit of brown, maybe a deep red, but you don't see too many purple cars or yellow cars.
That's true. Not many purple or yellow.
Yeah.
White's the most common, then comes blue, then comes black.
Yeah, it just.
But no, yellow and purple are not. Are not real movers and shakers.
Not high on the list. Well, I had read something some time ago that people will associate certain emotions with colors.
And, like red for anger, for example.
Right. Green with envy.
Pale blue with comfort, peacefulness. Green with envy. Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It just some of that stuff is intriguing. I wonder if home decorators take those into consideration also. I know the colors you're supposed to go with, white.
Well, if they're professional, I'm assuming that they do.
Yeah, that there's some reason. It's not a lemming theory, but it would be.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's why everybody has the brown carpet. Oh, now I get it.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. And have you seen any studies that indicate if color can be a triggering mechanism for some people, that an emotional trigger?
Well, yeah. That comes the red cape with a bullfight. Of course, bulls can't see color, so it doesn't matter much.
Right.
But yeah, some colors can be triggers, depending on a person's background, what they like or don't like, or what their family history is.
An association with that color?
Yeah. And some of it's idiosyncratic. I don't know of a general color that induces a certain kind of reaction.
Huh. I'm trying to think of colors. Yeah, because everybody seems to have a favorite color. Okay, most people seem to have a favorite color. I knew when I said that I was in dead water there.
A lot of people have a favorite color, yeah.
But and a lot of times it will change also.
It can. So generationally, with age, as people get older, their colors may change, particularly occupationally. If they go to college, they're not going to wear a dark suit and a tie. They're going to wear college clothes. Well, if they get a job in an institutional, like if an investment banker or something like that, then they have to conform to the unstated code of dress. It's not stated generally, it's just unstated. You see what everybody else is wearing, so you do the same thing.
Yeah, go to the same place, the same barber, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense, because that's all part of the culture that is found within that entity or within that organization. I mean,
same with drinking.
Different types of drinks?
drinking beer out of a bottle is is not recommended at a formal dinner.
Right.
Drinking beer is not recommended at a formal dinner. The hard liquor is generally served at a formal dinners, or wine.
Yes, and then only certain types of wine, certain types of liquors.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah. You go to a power meeting and order Riesling, that's going to be looked at a little bit differently than if you order a Cabernet or something along those lines.
I suppose so, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Knobs notwithstanding.
There you go, there you go. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Simple Country Therapist Lou Quimby. Lou, the holidays are a time when there's a lot of culture, a lot of institutionalization, a lot of colors, a lot of these types of things that we've kind of been referencing for the first part of the program. As we get into times with family, tight time or tight spaces, traditions, emotions, and then put on a good-fashioned layer of COVID and people's interpretations of what's going on there. Any rules of the road right now that you would suggest for folks if they're going to be gathering either later this weekend or perhaps one of the weeks before Christmas on how to either host or to attend an event with all of this all these variables present?
It depends on where it is. If it's a family meeting, then you got to figure out what the family has agreed to, whether it's masks or no masks. But the thing about sitting down, if you're going to mask for Thanksgiving, then you got to take the mask off to eat. Does that mean you move the mask down every time you take a bite? Probably not. People are probably going to unmask for the entire meal.
Right.
And then you go back in the living room and sit down and have a cordial after dinner, and everybody masks up. That seems kind of strange. So then you go back that one up to, has everybody had their vaccine shots? And the probability of getting COVID if you've had double vaccine shots is still a probability. It doesn't 100% eliminate the possibility of getting COVID. So people got to think about that. So if you're in an institution of some sort, well, a hospital, a school, they will provide guidelines.
Or edicts, depending on your point of view, yeah. Yeah, they'll give you the rules of the road, so to speak.
Yeah. So those things vary a lot. And whether or not you get COVID is some kind of a crapshoot of some sort, because you can even get it if you've been double vaccinated. Now, it's rare, but it's still possible. That makes a difference.
Right, right. So as we're looking at this, and let's say it's a social gathering, but it's friends and family.
Yeah.
Not just exclusive to families. So you may not know all the players. You may know all the players. You may feel comfortable. You may not feel comfortable.
So then it brings a date that nobody knows except them.
Right, right. Yeah. Second date. Let's go meet the family.
Yeah. boy.
Oh, you talk about that in a whole different scenario later on, but you know that. But in that kind of a setting, you've got, I think probably in most families, the full range, the full gamut represented, from the no way in God's green earth am I going to, all the way out to everybody has to, and that's just the way that it is.
So, present your vaccination card at the door.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the gate for the parking lot, not necessary to get inside the building. So you've got that wide range. Is there a way to tactfully wade into this
pool? Family, and you invite one of your personal friends you've known for decades, and they bring a date unknown to anybody except them, and it turns out they're an anti-vaxxer. They haven't had any injections whatsoever. Now what happens at the table?
I don't think you can get away with the kid table and an adult table in that scenario.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Put them with the kids.
Yeah. Oh, you know. And people think that we rehearse this thing.
Kids supposedly have more
innate
resistance than adults do.
Right. Well, let's take the current out of this one and say, what if you have a family event and somebody brings the nobody knows who this person is date along? If you happen to be the one bringing, how much do you warn, anticipate, educate, what to anticipate? And if you are the one who's being brought along, what are some of the things that the reference points or the little indicators that we should be paying attention to?
Well, that's interesting. If you're the date going into a family you don't know anything about, if they're operating with intelligence, they will ask about COVID circumstances and the vaccine circumstances. And if they're intelligent, they'll ask that beforehand so they can come prepared for whatever it is that's going to be asked of them. Now, it could be they'll be asked if they have vaccines, or they could find out from their date, their family date, what the family does about this stuff. Or they could call the host and hostess of the dinner and find out. Now, we haven't had that today because we didn't have a friend over that wasn't vaccinated. But they could call and find out ahead of time to overt a grossly embarrassing confrontation.
Right.
That would save a lot of grief right there.
Yeah, and probably reduce stress from certain people, like the person you're going with.
I would think so.
You might be able to hang around until dinner that way.
I'll wait in the car.
Yeah, just bring the dessert out, okay?
I'll see you in 3 hours.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with 3 airlines serving 5 destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Lou Quimby. Lou, the concept of being included into another family's holiday celebration tradition sometimes works smoothly, sometimes not so much so. How do you avoid some of those pitfalls? Let's say we pass the vaccine test. How do you avoid some of those pitfalls of family dynamics and emotions that besiege some families?
I always start with my parent ego state first, and then kind of formal and careful, And then my adult, I'll ask some questions. And then if I find it safe, then I'll let my child out. But when you go into a family you don't know, you don't know what their humor is like, what their politics is like, or their religion. And God help us if any of that comes up.
Right. Yeah, even if there's unanimity, that doesn't necessarily mean everybody's truly on board.
Right.
Yeah, I would suspect that during the holidays it's kind of tacky, gauche, whatever you want to call it, to talk politics. I mean, it comes up, certainly, but, you know, is that really what you want the theme of the entire event to be associated with?
No, certainly not.
Yeah,
they can talk about the weather and current events and where you're from. You know, where were you born? Where'd you grow up? They can do general kinds of things like that.
Or even if you really want to battle it out, okay.
No.
Apple pie recipes.
No, if you want to battle it out.
Yeah, you know, have some fun talking about how much cinnamon do you put in? Do you use allspice?
Da 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 da. Thanksgiving I ever had was family and no friends.
Yeah.
that's not a starter.
Yeah.
That's a finisher.
But I would think food-related stuff is going to be pretty safe unless you really go overboard.
Yeah, you could talk about different kinds of Thanksgivings you've had. Some people have had Thanksgiving overseas with families overseas.
Yeah.
Let's see. Sometimes families put on a Thanksgiving dinner. Foreign families will put on a Thanksgiving dinner for an American couple as a courtesy. And it's interesting then to see what they do.
Well, you know, and the different meals, too, or different food that's presented.
Yeah.
You know, sweet potatoes or yams. As an example, how come, where'd that come from? I would think it'd be a chance to find out a whole bunch of neat stuff about other people and other people's traditions.
Yeah. And you go back and a generation or two or three even and see how that works out. That's like the old story of the ham. You know that story?
About the ham and the chicken?
No, guy comes home. And she serves him ham with both the ends cut off. And she does this for a couple of years, and he finally says, "Why do you cut the ends of the ham off?" And he says, "My mother always did that." And then finally, mother-in-law comes over and says, "Why'd you do that?" "Well, my mom told me that when they came over in the Conestana wagon, they only had this one pan, and it wasn't big enough for a whole ham. So they cut the ends off to make the ham." They've been doing it ever since.
Yeah.
Even though they had bigger pans.
Yeah. Well, you know, and if that's part of the family tradition, God love you, but pass it on to everybody. Let everybody know what's going on.
Yeah, and those traditions can come from strange places as far as that goes.
Yeah, well, that's kind of part of the fun, isn't it? The discovery of why we do what we do and how come.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
as long as food is good and hot and safe, tasty, doesn't matter so much exactly what it is.
No, it'd be yeah.
Or a turkey or a goose.
Have you ever had goose for Thanksgiving?
No, never had goose for Thanksgiving.
Neither have I.
We're having turkey.
That's what we do too.
Yeah.
One or two, take your pick, but turkey, yes.
I like a good drumstick, I'll tell you that.
Oh, you're a dark meat, huh? So's Winston.
I'm a dark meat kind of guy.
I will cut it off and hand it to you.
Give me a drumstick and I'm happy.
Yeah, okay. Go sit in the corner and nibble on your drumstick, huh?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Next, I'll stay right at the table and proudly
nibble
on a drumstick.
Well, you know, as long as you stay away from the stuffing and the mashed potatoes, I am okay with you.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, those... That's where I go. Just
I love mashed potatoes and gravy.
With the gravy on it, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All righty, well, hopefully the leftovers will treat you kindly, and we'll see you Christmas Eve. Oh, no, New Year's Eve. Pardon me, New Year's Eve. How's that for losing a year, a lightning bolt? Wow. Alrighty, bud.
I'm going to see you New Year's Eve.
You got it.
Okay.
Alrighty. Thanks.
Ciao.
See everybody on Monday.